Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Inside Baseball Podcast. I am one of the hosts of this, Steve Soucy, returning to the air after a long break. Got an itch to talk some baseball. Hopefully some of the members of the Big McBride League will show up to discuss some of the recent off-season happenings that have happened in regards to the Bake. It has been a very active offseason in regards to the last 10 days. A lot of trades have been made after the first of the year, kind of a flurry. It has been one of those situations where we usually have a lot of trade action that comes right after the season starts. It was kind of a calm offseason for the most part. And all of a sudden, on the first of the year, on the holiday, everybody got involved in making some deals. So there's quite a bit of activity in the league. First of all, if you're listening to this podcast tonight, it will primarily be about the activity of our 20-man fantasy baseball league, the Bake McBride League. We have, it's a 4x4 with a slight modification, but also I would like to comment, if you're listening to this podcast and you're not a member of the Bake McBride League, you're probably going to be pretty bored, and I have to question your sanity. So that is a part of it, but so far we haven't had anyone show up for discussion with us. So let's just break down a few of the trades that have happened in the league since the beginning of the year. The flurry all started on January 1st, where a bunch of moves were made, and the first one being a trade that still makes no sense to me, and I was hoping at least one of these two gentlemen would show up this evening to explain themselves. Olszewski trades the great Caleb Joseph to Garrett Shively for Jason Hamill, and obviously that trade seems, I guess, kind of pointless. So let's move on from that one and go on to the next one. Obviously, this was one that was a little bit of a head scratcher. Jimmy traded middle reliever Andrew Miller to Garrett Shively for Matt Duffy. So far, by the way, this is an auction keeper league, so we're talking about guys that are all basically at the minimum salary. Miller is an $11 player. Duffy is at $6, so that is a swap at least with low salaried players. That is one where Miller is, at least in my opinion, seems to be destined for middle relief duty this year with the Yankees, with the addition of Aroldis Chapman and the presence of Dellin Betances. So there's obviously not a lot of save opportunity there for him. It seems that the Yankees are going to hold on to him. So that was a trade that I'd like Garrett to explain to me what he's seeing there that I'm not. But Garrett appears to be in Disneyland. So, and I guess it could be said that Garrett is always in Disneyland. So that's an interesting situation there. Those of you that are listening live, if you wanted to call in and missed the number, the call-in line tonight is area code 646-787-8499. To continue on with the trade roundup from around the beginning of the year, one of our resident frequent traders, Dan Schneider, traded Brett Boxberger to Jimmy once again, trader Jimmy, for Mark Teixeira, Andres Blanco, and Jason Rogers, and I don't understand why a couple of those guys were even included in the trade. Andres Blanco, dude, what are you doing? And then we move on, and then we started to get into the big activity trades, as I'm describing them. Basically, you're looking at the first trade that was made was between Rob Laird and Garrett Shively, and Shively sent Jonathan Scope, Charlie Blackman, and Brad Ziegler to Rob Laird for George Springer. George Springer, a $16 player in our league's salary function, so he's quite valuable. Other pieces in there, Shoop, a $9 player, Blackman, an $11 player, Ziegler, a $6 player. It was like on the surface that I don't often say this, that Rob Laird got the better of that one, because as you'll find out later on, he flipped Blackmon over again shortly after making this deal. Yet another trade involving Matt Duffy and Brad Ziegler was shortly turned over with Matt Duffy being sent to Laird for Brad Ziegler. So then that was moved around, and then once again Brad Boxberger was traded again. Boxberger sent from once again Jimmy Street, who was very busy on January 1st, to Paul Schmidt for Kevin Pillar. Both Boxberger, a $13 player, Pillar, a $6 player. Then Ryan Powell got into the activity by trading Young Ho Gong to Rob Laird for Randall Grichuk, both of those players at the league minimum contract of $6 each. And then we go from there. And that there were more trades involving those players as well. Then I got involved for the first time in the offseason trading Fleury, trading a $6 Odubel Herrera and a $15 Curtis Granderson to Trader Jimmy for a $6 Ender Inciarte and a $21 Hunter Pence. And so that was my first trade of the offseason. And then we will move on to some more big deals. Then Trader Jimmy sends Odubel Herrera, Lorenzo Cain, and Mike Moustakas. Moustakas, I believe, an $8 player. Cain, a $20 player. Herrera, once again, a $6 player. And I think a $9 Ken Giles to Ivan O'Brien for a $10 Brandon Crawford, an $11 JD Martinez, and a $6 Yours Familia. So that was a rather big deal. Then I got back in the waters again, and that was one of these deals that Dallas Keuchel, it was probably the one commodity on my personal roster that I felt like was really movable in this offseason, was an $11 contract. And I have a pretty thin keeper roster, so I needed to make a quantity move to try to get closer to a number of eight players that I felt like that I could keep. So I sent Keuchel and his $11 salary to Paul Schmidt for a $14 Kendry Morales, a $16 K.H. Davis, the Milwaukee Brewer version, a $16 Gregory Polanco, a $10 A-Rod, a $29 Chris Sale, a $6 Robert Stevenson, and a $6 J.J. Hoover. So kind of remade my keeper list in that situation. So that was the biggest trade in terms of quantity that was made on the New Year's Day and post-New Year's Day flurry of deals, but they just kept coming. And that followed with Charlie Blackmon heading to Rob Laird for J.D. Martinez and Brad Ziegler. So the second time Ziegler had been passed through those two teams, they went back and forth. So that was another deal made there. And then I made one more trade, trading K.H. Davis and Kendry Morales, who I had acquired in that previous deal, for the $6 Young Ho Gong and a $6 Logan Forsythe. So I just kind of seemingly moving a few assets around. So that was one of those situations where I just felt like I was trying to make some moves to get closer to a list of eight guys that I kind of liked. So that was better for that. And then finally the trade started to slow down a little bit. And after that, Rob Laird once again traded one another guy. So he traded $14 Morales to Laird for a $6 Nick Hundley. So that was done. And then Dan Schneider, once again back in the trading waters, trade a $6 Billy Burns to Kenny Street. Once again, Jimmy Street, Trader Jimmy, dealing for a $10 Brandon Crawford. And then we had one more trade. Andrew McCutchen, a $36 player, traded by Kyle Neighbors for an $11 Steven Souza. So that was a trade made to maybe reduce some salary. So that was one trade made. And then you're basically looking at that, wrapping up the activity of the first couple days of January. So once again, getting a little tired of talking to myself, fellas. So if you're out there listening tonight, you were the ones clamoring for a podcast. So I'm hoping that maybe one of you will give me a ring and let me know what you think of some of these off-season moves. The call-in number, 646-787-8499. So And we still got some more to go through here, so a couple more trades to look over. And the last one was most recently flipped over about a week ago on Monday. This was an interesting one. Zach Olszewski, who has kind of cornered the market on prospect players in our league, decided to trade a couple of them out, trading an $11 Miguel Sano and an $11 Carlos Rodon to Phil Colling, last year's champion, Danny Salazar, a $10 player, Carlos Carrasco, a $11 player, and Hector Rondon, an $11 player. So that was an interesting trade for a couple of reasons. And then in comes the trade that I was really hoping one of these guys would give us a call tonight so they could justify both sides of this. Dan Schneider traded his absolute man crush, DJ LeMahieu, for $6, and in my opinion, fleeced an absolute king's ransom out of Olszewski for him in Byron Buxton, $11 player, Brad Miller, a $12 player, and Danny Salazar, a $10 player. I personally and a lot of other people in the league felt like this was a trade where I wouldn't have traded any of those individual players for LeMahieu, and he got three of them. So, well done, Daniel. We'll see how you screw this up over the months to come. And then finally, the last trade, which was consummated on Thursday to wrap up the January flurry of trades, Jared Darling traded a Jared Darling traded a $6 Michael Taylor, a $6 Cameron Maveman, a $6 Eduardo Rodriguez for a $10 Brandon Crawford. So that that made up the trade roundup of the first weeks of January here. A lot of activity in the lead. So you're looking at a situation now where some guys that maybe felt like their keeper list was a little thin started trading out some depth to try to get to the modified keeper list. We can keep in a range of 4 to 8 players. You have to keep 4, and you can keep a maximum of 8. So that is one of the things that we try to do when we're looking at this stuff. A lot of us are trying to get as close to 8 with these guys that we keep. Some of us only keep the guys that are premium, so it's just a matter of how you attack it. So moving on from that, you're finding a way to get that keeper list in the best position possible. So usually in the 20-team league, I would say we probably keep somewhere in the neighborhood of about 130 to 140 players across those 20 teams. Pretty much everybody fills up, but there are a few people that do not keep the maximum 8 numbers. We also have some stringent keeper rules in regards to dump trades that are made. There are some players that fall in the realm of being required keepers, which is kind of a tricky notion in our league. You're looking at a situation where we have first division teams and second division teams can make deals in the regular season, but after a certain date, you are only allowed to make those types of deals as a first division team if you are willing to keep one of the players that you signed up to trade for. So we had about 20 of those players last year. That's down from nearly 30 last year. So we've only been doing this particular rule for 2 years, and it seems that it has taken hold as to people are a little bit more conservative about making those deals that are going to affect them the following year. So that has been an interesting thing to look at. Some of the people, for example, that have to be kept this year on that list. There are a few that are already locked in. Actually, we only have 16 of those deals this year. There are 2 that are already locked in. Paul Schmidt has to keep Henderson Alvarez at $14. So you can see how sometimes these things can get away from you. And Santiago Casilla is an $11 mandatory keep for Kyle Neighbors, which isn't too bad on the surface of things. But there are others out there that have to make some decisions. Actually, now that I'm looking at this list, there are a few more locked-in keepers, basically, when it comes right down to it. We have 15 of those total that we have to do now. I think I may have said just a minute ago that there was a few more, but there are a few guys out there that obviously you don't want to keep. There's a few people that have been pinched into a corner because they have some choices, but the choices aren't really choices because there are players on that list with salaries of $37 or something along those lines. So you really don't want to have to keep that unless there's really no other alternative for you. So That's one thing. And then, yeah, there are some interesting ones on there with Clayton Kershaw being a $46 player that is probably going to be kept by Steve Nitz, which would be the highest salaried player ever kept in the history of the Bake McBride League. His other option in that situation is Tyler Clippard, who is also overpriced at 12. So that's going to put him in a little bit of a difficult decision. There are a few other high salaried players that are out there, but will not likely be kept because there are other options for those people to do so. So just to give a frame of reference, the high salary point in our league is usually in the high 40s, 45, 46, 47, 48, somewhere in that neighborhood. So we draft out 23 active players, and then we have a 10-man taxi squad. Any guy selecting the taxi squad, it's a $1 salary. We bump salaries $5 each year. You can keep guys for as long as you want, as long as you are adding on those $5 per year. So that is the situation with the Bake rosters. I just basically want to throw that call out number out there one more time to see if anybody's going to give us a call in. If not, we're going to shut this one down for the evening, as we don't have anyone who has called in, and I don't feel like talking to myself anymore. I do that enough as it is. The guest call-in tonight, area code 646-787-8499. Again, one more time, and then I just want to kind of touch some of the real baseball moves that have been made recently that have been going on. It's been kind of an interesting offseason, just in the sense of the fact that there still seems to be a numerous number of marquee players that are available that impact rosters and change the way that things are going. The latest trade in baseball was a somewhat interesting trade between the Washington Nationals. I want to keep calling Ben Revere a Philly because I had just gotten used to that. The Washington Nationals and the Toronto Blue Jays, where former Washington National closer Drew Storen was sent to Toronto in exchange for Ben Revere. Interesting trade for both teams. Washington, obviously, now without Denard Span, who recently signed a free agency contract with the San Francisco Giants, leaving them a bit of a vacancy in the outfield. Filling that in is basically, was one of those things where we had to get that going on, and now we've got a call in, it appears. So hold on a second. I'm going to bring those in. Hello, caller. Who we got? So now we got a couple callers here, and I'm trying to get them involved here. Okay.
Hey, Seuss, this is Larry.
All right. Hey, what's going on, man? Who else we got here? 955-6433, who's that?
Yes, Seuss. This is the number you call to talk about box office hits and Oscar buzz?
Screw you, asshole.
Nope, that's nice.
This is dear.
hey, what's going on?
Why is no one calling in? I wanted to hear some fighting or something.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I went on a late night food run for the wife, and it took me a while, so that's why I was late.
Well,
wow,
I was confused. We've had people clamoring for this for weeks, and I throw one out there. We got no activity.
Well, I'm convinced Paul is probably walking the streets right now, still trying to justify Vontaze Burfict's hit on Antonio Brown. And Garrett's ride to Disney World.
He gets what he gets for betting on AJ McCarron. Come on. Whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That was definitely a betting anger. He definitely had money on the Bengals.
So, would either of you gentlemen like to assess your off season thus far?
Well, my list is still pretty bad, but at least it's better. That would be my assessment.
Yeah.
That was easy.
Yeah.
I've only made one deal, and I made that deal for Brandon Crawford with Schneider, and I gave up three $6 players that I liked, but honestly, I was probably only going to keep one of them maybe, and Michael Saylor. And I just thought getting Crawford, I now have three shortstops, you know, so second base shortstop eligibility between Seager, Russell, and Crawford. So I liked how that sounded, so I just went for it.
Yeah, I've been kind of pestering you for a couple of your guys, and you haven't really been budging, so I kind of left you alone.
What do you think the what do you think the realistic perspective for Michael Taylor is, darling?
I think Michael Taylor is good, and I think he's a 15 homer, 20 stolen base type of guy. I just don't know if the Nationals, who are in a think they can win the World Series, are going to trust him with an everyday job. And I really like him. I think he's really talented, but like Garrett would always get after me and say, you know, he's a platoon player, you know, so.
Yeah.
They have a lot of guys.
I think he could hit 195, too.
Yeah, you know, this year, though, this past year, he limited his strikeouts, and that went down, and he put more balls in play. But as far as that goes, I mean, yeah, he sometimes swings and misses a lot.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't go too crazy here. I was trying to get him from you too, so let's not act like I hate him.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those toolsy guys that can do some things.
Yeah, when you're but you were in, if I'm not mistaken, I mean, initially you did not have Taylor amongst your eight, correct?
Correct. Taylor was sort of like an eight nine sort of guy.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's, I mean, for you, I mean, getting somebody like Crawford, I mean, maybe improves, maybe solidifies the back end of your list. Is that what you're kind of thinking there?
Yeah, I think so. And there's still, you know, there's still people that, it's funny, in this league, I like Addison Russell, though I hate the Cubs. I think Addison Russell's good. And there's probably four guys in this league that really want Addison Russell, and there's probably four guys in this league that think Addison Russell sucks. So I think by getting Crawford, that helps me to maybe potentially think about dealing him. You know, I would deal Seager, but everyone lowball offers for Seager, and you know, I think Seager's ceiling is, you know, really high, so it's going to take a lot to get him.
See, I don't think that you are willing to trade Seager, though. I mean, I mean, I understand what you're saying, that you're open to the idea of it, but I don't think there's really a legitimate offer that somebody, that it would make sense for somebody else to make, that you'd be willing to accept.
Yeah, that's probably
because
fair.
I mean, yeah, it's just, that's just basically the conversation that we've had with you, that I've had with you, got me the feeling that it would take some like top five or six keeper to wrest Seager away from you, and I don't think anybody in this league's willing to do that.
Yeah, I mean, as crazy as it sounds, I consider him a top 5 to 10 keeper right now. At $6, playing shortstop, I mean, he's never hit below 300. People say, let's see him do it in the majors. He hit 337 the final month and a half of the season. And I mean, I think he's only going to get better. So, I mean, I've had talks with other people for big names, for really good keeper hitters. And a lot of people want to trade keeper pitching, but, you know, keeper pitching is just not as valuable in this league. So, we'll see. But, yeah, your assessment's probably right. It's going to take a lot for me, and I probably overvalue him. Even though he's extremely valuable, I still probably overvalue him.
Yeah, and I'm not saying I blame you at all. I just don't – I think maybe you're being a little disingenuous when you say you're willing to trade him. I don't think that you are. I don't blame you for wanting the moon for him, but I just don't see that deal ever happening.
Yeah, I guess we will see.
Well, I've been looking at the trades over the last couple of days. Does everyone hate the DJ LeMahieu trade that Olszewski made with Schneider as much as I do?
You know,
I don't understand it.
Seuss, I think you said it best at the holiday tournament when I saw you, when we talked fantasy baseball for 10 or 15 minutes, and we said that Zach had a great list, but he could screw it up. And I honestly think I don't think either trade he's made has made much sense, but that one, I didn't care for it at all. I thought the trade with Phil was bad, but I thought the trade for DJ LeMahieu was bad, unless we're adding gold gloves, you know, category to our scoring.
You know, I don't like the trade that he made with Phil, but I don't hate it as much as I dislike the LeMahieu trade because I think if you I think honestly
but real quick, so let's focus on that deal with Phil. He gave up Carlos Rodon and he gave up, who else did he give up in that deal?
Sano.
And he got back who? Danny Salazar and Hector Rondon?
I believe he got Salazar, Carrasco, and Rondon.
Okay, well, yeah.
I thought that deal basically was for Sano. I don't think he was keeping Carlos Rodon. I think.
Oh, he was. He was.
I think, well, maybe as like number eight. I don't know if he really liked Rodon, but Dre was
still
basically
counts.
Those
no.
three guys for Sano.
Well, he must have changed his mind over the last few weeks if that's the case, because, I mean, when we talked, Rodon was in his you can't have him list.
I like Danny Salazar. I think guys who've already had the Tommy John surgery, that's a good move to go for. So I think that is a nice piece.
The Billy Bean philosophy.
I think Hector Rondon sucks, and I think people forget that like he lost his job a couple times last year to guys like Matt Albers. No, not Matt Albers. He lost it to Fernando Rodney for a little bit. He lost it to Pedro Schrope for a little bit.
Was the guy that he lost to it for
yeah,
a little
there,
bit.
There you go. So I mean, I can't see New Zach is keeping Rondon, right? There's no way Rondon fits into his eight. Maybe he's just
dude,
acquiring
I think pieces. I think he keeps Rondon.
I think really? He does now. I think he does now after over the last few days he's traded Buxton, Rodon, and Sano from what I consider to be his locked eight, and he gets, well, maybe he's keeping LeMahieu. I don't know what he's doing, but once again,
he has
he
to keep LeMahieu.
Seems to,
I mean, with that deal.
Well, but think about it. He's still got five of his eight that he proclaimed that he wanted to keep. So it's either going to be LeMahieu or Rondon, because he's not going to not keep Salazar or Carrasco.
Didn't he deal Salazar in that deal for LeMahieu?
Oh, yeah, he sent Salazar away, that ridiculous LeMahieu trade. Okay, you're right.
I don't see how that trade makes any sense if he doesn't keep LeMahieu then. I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't keep LeMahieu if I had his list, but I wouldn't have made that deal either. I think if he's making that deal, he's basically saying, I'm keeping LeMahieu.
Well, right. I mean, I think his eight have LeMahieu, Buxton, Rodon, and Sano are replaced by Carrasco, Rondon, and LeMahieu. Which
right.
That makes me laugh
downgrade.
To say that when I say it out loud.
Downgrade, yeah.
I mean, that's.
But I mean, I didn't hate the idea of trading Sano for Salazar, Carrasco, and Rondon. If he had another deal in mind, because he already had eight good keepers, so he didn't need to do it.
I totally agree with that.
If the move was to get LeMahieu, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And like you said, the trades aren't awful. I just sort of just had that feel of trading just to trade a little bit. So.
Oh,
yeah,
the deal for LeMahieu was awful. That one was, I mean, that was awful. It was bad.
No, I'm in complete agreement there. I think that it doesn't make a lot of sense. I've talked with you before, Laird. I said before the off season started that he should just log out of the page and just not talk to anybody until draft day.
You, regardless of what only he bet- does or regardless of what he does any longer and what he, you know, if he does anything or if he even sold still, he has a nice list and he's going to be ready to go at the draft, but he has not drafted before. If you remember, somebody else drafted for him last year. And I think it's going to be fun to watch him and Kenny's side bet about a higher finish, because I'll tell you right now, every year, I think Jimmy Street's keeper list sucks. I think he...
Yep.
Is crazy, but you know what? I told Garrett this the other day. He will just simply outwork most of the people in this league. I don't know if I don't know if he just enjoys it more than we do. I don't know if sales are down and he just has a lot more time on his hands. But I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that he will outwork Nuzak and finish higher than him. No disrespect to Nuzak. I'm just saying, Jimmy will outwork him.
Jimmy Sneaky has
good
drafts. I mean, he's every year we kind of don't know what he's doing, and he might make a mistake or two. But at the end of the day, you look at the drafts, and somehow Jimmy's had a great draft. I mean, that's happened the last 3 or 4 years.
But he's also the king. He's also the king of picking up or trading for freaking Lance Berkman, riding the hot hand for a month, then turn around and trade him for, you know, Dexter Fowler, who has 10 steals in 1 week, and turn around and trade him. I mean, he just, you're right, but he's very active, and he watches categories for where he needs to gain, you know, and so gain his saves, and he'll get a lead there, then he'll trade a closer for steals. I mean, he just simply outworks most of us.
Well, and I think he also, he's outworking or out-annoying or whatever. It's like, I mean, he knows that, like, for example, he knows that I want nothing to do with Mark Teixeira. But he'll keep working every goddamn roster in this league so he can get a slight upgrade by trading Mark Teixeira. And then he'll go to someone else and work a slight upgrade for the guy he just traded for. Me, it's a hell of a lot of work to make 8 different trades to get a slight upgrade over Mark Teixeira, but he'll do it.
Right.
I think it says something about some of the people in this league that seem to just do things willy-nilly for the hell of it, but, you know, whatever.
Right.
But if we look at his list right now, it's really Familia and Blackman and then a pile of crap. Right.
But look at his list before he got Familia and Blackman. What did he have?
Right, right.
It's better than it was 2 weeks ago. Because, like, when he sent me his list, like, before the flurry started around New Year's, it was like, what the hell did he have?
But don't kid yourselves, too. It's not even the middle of January. There's probably a strong guarantee Jimmy won't even have Blackman and Familia on his final keeper list.
Oh, there's 10 more
trades. He might have Blackman traded by next week.
There's 10 more trades in that tank.
Right.
Let's not kid ourselves.
I had one day that was a flurry like that. I had to bring my car in for a repair in the Quad Cities. I had to do it at the dealership that I bought it at. And I had like 4 hours where I was just sitting in the waiting room waiting for my car. And I just was like, I'm gonna make deals today. And that's when I flipped Springer and Grychuk. I flipped those two. And at the end of the day, I had J.D. Martinez, Matt Duffy, Nick Hundley, K.H. Davis, Brad Ziegler, and John Scope, and Jonathan Papelbon. So I thought that was a very Garrett/Jimmy-like day for me right there.
What happened to Garrett? Did he get another dog or something? He seems like way less active than he was before.
Hold on, I gotta go. I'll be right back, guys.
Uh-oh, he's in trouble.
Yeah.
I picture Laird in one of his kids' rooms, like in the corner on the phone, and he just got caught.
You have any insight on what happened to Trader Garrett?
Garrett's just Garrett. I think he's still trying to do things. I think he is dead set. You know, I don't think anyone can pry Paul Goldschmidt away from him. He loves Paul Goldschmidt. And
I don't think anyone should be able to pry Paul Goldschmidt from him unless it's
but
you.
I think right now, he'll be all right. I expect him to start making trades here soon. I know he was busy with some things at work, and I know he's on vacation this week at Disney, but, you know, you can only do so much at Disney. So I expect everyone to get several trade offers this week as he's walking around theme parks.
Garrett.
I'm more interested in some of the other guys. Some of the guys who aren't real active on the page or aren't real active in the trade front, but there's some of the guys in the bottom half that, you know, might have one really good keeper or a not-so-great keeper list. But, you know, some of those guys down there have a stud piece that they can flip for 3 or 4 pieces, and I'm anxious to see if they do that or if they just try to roll with what they've got.
Yeah. I mean, it's It's interesting. I don't. There are a few down there. It's like, I wonder about them because they're historically down there. I mean, that's.
We're talking about you, Kyle Rego. Kyle Rego has Jose Abreu. Oh, he could flip Jose Abreu into four people.
Yeah. Well, he did. He did something that I thought was interesting with when he made that McCutchen deal with Neighbors for Souza. I'm like, well, if you're doing that, you're probably keeping him because you're probably keeping Souza. So, I mean, unless you're forced to, I'm not a huge fan of keeping guys at 36. But
yeah, it's I don't know. Maybe he just figured he'd have $26 left at the end of the auction, so just overspend now to try to avoid
yeah.
that problem.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he does have a history of that, you know. So I think one of these years, just as an experiment, I'm just gonna dock him $30 to start and see if he notices.
There you go. That'd be good.
See if he still leaves 30. That would be really fascinating.
Yeah. You know, I think that's something that, you know, maybe the next time and as we go ahead, as we move forward, and I'm sure we'll look at keeper lists and they're going to change all the time. But I definitely think it's so interesting how some guys try to get the cheapest list possible and try, you know,
yeah.
he always joke about six bucks, you know, and a guy like Foy, you know, never even keeps eight because he never has eight guys to keep, but he might have five players that he keeps or six, you know, or something like that. But I think it's interesting because for the most part now, you know, been in this league 4 or 5 years, guys pretty much have the same strategy all the time. You know, it seems like guys
yeah.
go into it either, hey, we're trying to get the best possible keepers or trying to get the least possible dollars on their keeper list. And you can, you know, you pretty much can just pinpoint what guys are going to do.
I like going around and looking on the salary sheet and seeing how many $6 players people have on the roster. It makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, I'm waiting for someone to try to pull an old Garrett where, like, his entire roster is full of $6 guys.
Well,
like, right now, Rego only has 9 players on his team that aren't $6 guys.
Wow.
that's somewhat entertaining.
But
how many more years? Yeah, go ahead.
No, you can go ahead, Seuss. I'll ask it later.
How many more years? How many more years, Jared? You know what I'm asking.
I think I can keep them both well into their mid 40s. So that's,
okay, I
good,
accept that.
Yeah, it's probably. I mean, it's at least 3 or 4 more.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they keep doing what they're doing, why not?
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, at some point, they're going to stop stealing bases. You know, that's just what guys do. They're going to stop stealing bases, but hopefully they can keep hitting, and, you know, we'll see what happens.
Here's my question, Seuss. I think, I would say that Newsak's list is the best. I would assume that you guys would agree. Who's got the second best keeper list in the league right now?
Boy, that's an interesting question. I think there's a lot of people that have a couple of nice pieces. I haven't really looked at it, like, to the full extent that, like, I will here in a little while, like, trying to guess what people have.
Mm-hmm.
I think the weirdest thing about this league and the way that it's been going recently, and you've been in it a while, but not like the length of time that I'm talking about now. I think people we're finally starting to catch up with this a little bit, where
right.
there aren't 50 $6 keepers out there where you're like, ooh, like a lot of the keepers are $16 guys, like
right.
that are worth keeping. There's no doubt they're worth keeping, but you're just not getting that enormous value that you were getting before for $6 guys. That's just the way that I feel about it. I mean, every year you're going to have some guys.
I think there's only like maybe 100 to 120 people players in the league right now who are really technically worth keeping. Whereas before,
fair.
You know, you'd have guys that were leaving guys off and everybody can keep at least 6 or like, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not going to keep 8 just to keep 8, although I do have 8 right now that I like. But if I were some of these people in the league, I would just keep my four and just be done with it. I wouldn't try to stretch myself out and keep guys. I don't think there's just enough players out there that are worth keeping.
Well, 2 weeks ago, I was going to keep five. And people might say that I'm full of shit, that I'm lying, but 2 weeks ago, I was going to keep five.
Yeah.
I mean, because I just didn't see it. And then, of course, Mike Rizzo can just eat a dick. I hate that guy. So, I mean, you know, hey, we got this great closer who's got a whole bunch of saves. Let's trade for a holy fucking asshole and just boot him from the job. And then we'll wait until the off season, and then we'll trade him to another team that already has an established closer and just fuck him right up the ass again. God, I hate Mike Rizzo. What a dick.
And, you know, that sort of goes hand in hand with what we were talking about earlier, though, with the Michael Taylor thing. Like,
yeah,
you know, that now gives them four outfielders again. You know, Taylor was always sort of like the I'll fill in when worse and Span or hurt because one will be hurt. Well, Span's gone, but now he's got Revere to battle, you know, so.
And he's
Drew
Tanner. So he's public enemy number one, I think, in the Bake League right now.
I hate that guy. I hate him so much. Guy's a dick. I was waiting all off season for him to trade Drew Storen to somebody who needed a closer. Let's do something sensible. And then, like, the other night, I'm looking at Twitter, and I saw that Drew Storen had got traded, and I got really excited. And then I saw where he got traded. I'm like, God damn it. It's just brutal. I hate everything. Maybe I can convince Garrett that Drew Storen's going to close, since he seems real apt to trade for guys who are probably a seventh inning guy.
That would be a good idea. I think Phil actually or you, Jared, probably have the second best list.
I think
you three. Then there's a big drop off until the next wave. And I myself is probably in that next pocket of, you know, the tier two sort of list.
And the thing is the lists sort of just are what they are now. Just because,
right?
Like I said, Newsack has a great list. Let's see him draft now, because unfortunately he can't come in and just draft prospects, or, you know, like he did, how he went high on Kershaw and McCutchen and then traded them for more prospects.
Yeah,
I think.
Oh,
he's got to complete a roster. Yeah, but he's got to also try to compete now. You know, so it'll be interesting to see how his draft goes.
Yeah, he's going to have to find the $10 value guys 3 hours into the draft. Can he do that?
And that's the thing, though, is people forget. You know, if he wasn't at the draft last year, Powell's brother did it for him. If he screws up the draft, last year was really wasteful, you know, if he just comes in and shifts himself in the draft. But I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and the funny thing is about it, like with Kershaw essentially being kept, and if you really look at what the landscape of the league is probably going to be, how many, even if he wanted to come in and go stars on top of what he already has, how many stars are going to be available?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head with that. More and more. There's like five guys, I think, now, you know, that don't get kept nowadays. You know, like you said,
yeah.
Kershaw might get kept. Who knows what happens? But, like, yeah, it seems like there's always guys that save their money. You know, three or four guys will come in with, you know, $60 keeper lists, and they're all going to be fighting for Miguel Cabrera, for whoever, you know, a Max Scherzer or somebody like that. And then they sort of go over value. You know, they go for over what they should go for. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who the pit fights are over this year, because I just don't like the people that are stacking up piles of money. Like I'm at about like a little over $100 right now, and I'm completely okay with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, in the end, people put so much emphasis on having a cheap list right now, but in the end, it's always $250. So whether you spend $120 of it now or you spend $70 of it now, you still have the same amount at the end.
Yeah, you're still going to be in the room bidding $15 for Justin Morneau because there's nothing left. So,
right.
I mean, that's the reality.